You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 119. Today's episode is all about craft beer in New Orleans. It's been several years since we specifically focused on the craft beer scene, and a whole lot's changed since then. We'll discuss current breweries and trends, talk about how to enjoy them, even during a global pandemic, and probably a whole lot more. The last episode was a Q&A show where we answered questions from listeners like you. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. Those are always fun episodes, and they cover a lot of ground. This one was no different. The previous one, prior to that, was a terrific discussion about Louisiana through the lens of our 64 parishes. I was joined by Aaron Greenwald, who's the editor-in-chief of a magazine called 64 Parishes. It's definitely worth a listen if you want a history lesson about Louisiana through our geography. Today's episode is sponsored by Liz Wood Realty. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor. And that's where Liz comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you're planning to rent or purchase. Look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. Liz makes the process fun and easy. Reach out to her at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Several members of our community, including one of my new neighbors, have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. The other thing that really sets Liz apart to me is the community that she builds. People that have worked with Liz in finding a home remain friends with her, and she does things with them a little bit harder right now during the pandemic, but she really does a great job of building community and connecting you with your new neighborhood and your new area. So when you're ready to make New Orleans your home, reach out to Liz. I'll also put a link in the show notes to an article that Liz wrote not too long ago about moving to New Orleans and why sometimes renting is the best first choice. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, the Instagram feed, the work I'm doing in general with Beyond Bourbon Street, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more, again, in the show notes or at beyondbourbonst.com/Patreon. But for a few dollars a month, you can support the show, and it really helps me continue my lens of New Orleans with you. If you pledge $10 a month or more, we'll mention you on the show, like our newest $10 sponsors, Kathy Meir, Georgiana Crowder, Eric Samuelson, we both know, my guest and I, Megan Hall, Candace Morrison, Sarah Jane Wood, Joe Bucher, Jaylith Hall Rivera, Shannon Kettler, John Guthrie, Sean Dusick, Danielle Trapp, and our newest $25 a month float captain, Brady Sexton. Thanks to all of those folks, plus the many others who contributed at the $5 level for supporting me. We're in the midst of a challenge to get to 200 patrons by my 50th birthday, which is September 16th. If we make it, I'm going to share some special content related to New Orleans through my first 50 years on the planet. If you want to help, head on over to the show notes or go directly to Patreon, patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. And last but not least, I appreciate our Beyond Bourbon Street partners, Nola Boards. They make great cutting boards and gifts, as well as terrific countertops and cabinets. Coast Roast Coffee, which is usually what I'm drinking in the morning, and Nola T-shirt of the month. So if you see pictures of me on Facebook these days, I am almost always wearing a Nola T-shirt of the month. With that, let's jump in. To help us explore the New Orleans craft beer scene, I wanted a travel partner, and beer is almost always better with friends, right? To do that, I am joined by a former guest and a really good friend who is also the founder of a company called Get Your Beer Bearings, or Beer Bearings. We'll talk about that in a minute. Chris Marshall, welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be back. Thanks for remembering that I was on before. I think we were over here visiting one day and a podcast recording broke out.
That's exactly what happened. I think it was a Q&A show. You right. And your wife, Jen.
Right.
Who met in this very space, in this very building. And Jen, longtime listeners know, Jen came up with the name Beyond Bourbon Street. And she was really the impetus behind it. We lived not far from her in Northern Virginia, and Jen was always asking about New Orleans. She came here with us for many years. And so, you know, I owe her a lot. I owe you guys a lot. But yeah, It's been a couple of years we did that show.
Yeah, I think it was 2018. We moved here in 2018, so I think it was shortly after we got here.
I think that's right. So anyway, we realized, or I got a bunch of requests about craft beer, and I realized that I had done an early one at your former employer, and we'll talk about that, at Urban South with Nora McGonigal. It was one of my first shows, and a lot's changed in the couple years since we did that, and I thought this would be a good time to talk about the beer scene and how it's changed, and also to highlight beers for people that either when they come in, they can't necessarily go hang out at a tap room or a brewery, but they can pick up some of these beers. We'll talk about some resources, and some of these have wider distribution than others. So let's jump in first a little bit about you. A bunch has changed since the last time you were on. So as I mentioned, you have a company. Talk a little bit about what Beer Bearings is and how people can find that right now.
Yeah, so you mentioned that at the time that we recorded the last episode, I was working at Urban South. Beer is kind of a second career for me, so I got into it after I met Jennifer, actually, and moved to Cincinnati, so lots of changes since 2015. And when I moved down here, I looked around for breweries to go to work for and found Urban South. It was a great time there, but I've kind of always had in the back of my mind this idea that I wanted to share my love of the product with people and my love of beer through kind of the lens of events and pairings and tastings and trying to elevate it a little bit, and also have a vision to work with restaurants on helping their beer menu along a little. So beer is something that tends to be thought of as kind of second class compared to things like wine and spirits, and I don't think that's valid or warranted, so I want to try to help restaurants understand that their cuisine will pair with beers and work with them that way.
Well, and along those lines, you really spent a lot of energy and went to school and got a certification called the Cicerone when you were working for Rheingeist up in Cincinnati. So maybe for people that aren't familiar with what a Cicerone is, can you talk a little bit about that and the designation, the levels, that sort of thing?
Sure. So yeah, my first professional beer experience, if you will, was at Rheingeist Brewery in Cincinnati when I moved there shortly after meeting Jen in 2015. And they have a great education program, still do. Shout out to those guys. And one of the things that they were able to do was put people through sort of a preparatory session for Cicerone. So what Cicerone is, if you know about the sommelier program, it's pretty much the same thing. There are four levels. There is a certified beer server, which is an online test. There is the certified Cicerone, which is what I have, which requires an in-person sitting, although actually they've gone online too. It's the 21st century, and it's the time of COVID. So they've gone online for that as well, for part of it. So that requires an in-person sitting, a lot of essay questions, really a lot of knowledge, and a video demonstration as well as a tasting demonstration. So you have to actually taste and be able to answer questions. And then beyond that, there is advanced and master, and those numbers get pretty small. There's still, I think, fewer than 20 people worldwide who are masters. The number of certified Cicerones is in the low thousands. And the advanced is somewhere in between there. So yeah, definitely the certified Cicerone is a step up from the beer server. So that's what Cicerone is. And it's really intended for people who are what I think of as front of house people, or people who sort of meet with the public and serve beer and talk about it and that sort of thing. So it was a great thing for me to get to do the things that I wanted to do.
Sure. And you did that up in Cincinnati and were able to carry that over to Urban South and now into Beer Bearings, which makes sense.
Right.
Right. And you talked about some of the things I know as your friend that you were planning on doing, been put on hold a little bit with COVID. But one of the ways that you have been able to share your love of beer and education with people is your relatively new YouTube channel.
Yep.
Right? So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I started a YouTube channel actually kind of at the beginning of the pandemic. I took that and actually made it an opportunity to talk to people about in the industry about what was affecting them with COVID. So I talked to people that I knew pretty much, as we all do. We kind of start off with folks that we know. So I talked to everybody from people in sales and production and so on about what COVID pandemic was meaning to them at the time, even in retail and all that. So I got a pretty good cross-section of all of that. It felt like that had kind of run its course at some point. I did about five of those that actually got posted. and took a little time to deal actually with some health related issues, and I've kind of come back from that now, so my headspace is clear and I can move on. And the next phase for the YouTube channel is going to be to start doing videos around the things that I'm really passionate about, which is how does one approach beer sort of semi-seriously, still having fun with it. And you said beer is about bringing people together. It absolutely is. And it's a beverage that you don't, you know, go hide in a corner and drink. You share it with people. So I want to share my love of it with people as well. So how do you appreciate beer? How is it made? What are styles? Why are they important? Where do they come from? That sort of thing. So you can look out for that on the YouTube channel, which is just called Beer Bearings, as a matter of fact.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And the other thing, before we jump into craft beer in New Orleans, is you've been doing this Friday episode, right? Friday series on Facebook in your Beer Bearings community, where you are starting to get into some of that about sharing a beer and talking about a beer of the week.
Right. So I just do beer of the week. I try to keep it under 5 minutes. I think that's about the right length for Facebook or really pretty much any video on the internet. And I just pick a beer every week to talk about. And it's not really a review. I don't think of it as a review. I think of it as highlighting something that I like. Quite often I'm tasting it live on the video for the first time, so there's a little element of surprise there, but it's usually something I think I'm going to like and something I know that I can talk about, and it represents the sorts of beers that are made in New Orleans.
Right, and you've tried to keep it pretty regional, as is the focus of your community. So that's something for people to check out, and kind of, you know, it leads into what I want to talk about, but it's a way to enjoy and get some education about not only beer in general, but about New Orleans or Louisiana beers,
right.
You know, and have a little fun with it. So that's a really cool thing that you're doing. I think it's a nice way to pivot sort of in the middle of COVID and still give people a way to enjoy, you know, enjoy virtually, essentially sharing space and sharing beer. So that's pretty great. I want to talk about New Orleans, and we can broaden that a little bit, but about the beer scene. Even since you came to New Orleans and then worked for Urban South, things have changed quite a bit. Off the top of my head, I don't have the number, and I should, because we were talking about it earlier. In Louisiana, I think there's about 25 breweries total.
Well, if you count brew pubs, which I would, it's more like 40, so it's a bunch. Yeah, it's a bunch.
And in New Orleans, they kind of run the gamut, or in the New Orleans area, from Abita, one of the oldest craft breweries in the country, to some really tiny ones that are popping up now. Where do you think we should start?
Let me start. If we were to talk about New Orleans area and including Abita, we can start there. Abita actually was founded in 1986, which you're right, makes them pretty old as far as craft beer is concerned. And they still hang out around the number 24, 25 producing craft brewery in the country. So they're still very, very relevant. That kind of age puts them up there with breweries like Bell's and Great Lakes and, you know, places you've heard of. So they're pretty old. Really, in the New Orleans area, I hear a lot of people talk about how they think that New Orleans came to craft beer a little bit late, but I don't agree with that, actually. If you go back and look at the national statistics, really the first brewery that was founded here in the city would have been Courtyard back in 2014. I'm sorry, Nola Brewing in 2009. We can't forget those guys. Nola's a special story. No, I was going to say Kurt Coco, the founder of Nola, was drinking a Dixie, which is also an iconic brand. And thinking that it was still being brewed in New Orleans, he had been away for a while, and he found out it was contract brewed in Wisconsin, so he decided somebody should open a brewery, and I've heard him tell the story a few times, and he said at some point he decided he should be the one to open a craft brewery, so he did that back in 09, and so they were really the first ones really in town that you would think of as a craft brewery. Courtyard came along in 2014, and then really the floodgates opened up thereafter. I think 2017 was the big year with, I believe, 5 openings. Here, and we have lost one, unfortunately, during COVID, but really everybody's been hanging in for various reasons and in various ways.
And we lost 40 Arpent before COVID, and that to me was a really great beer down in Araby, not far from the French Quarter. But there are lots of good ones. And you mentioned when you were talking about Kurt and Nola Brewing. So way back after Abita, but before Katrina, there was a brewery called Acadiana Brewery. It was a little tiny place. It was actually where Revel is now on Carrollton Avenue in Mid-City. But they were almost ahead of their time in terms of they were well before the sort of explosion of craft beer. They were really small. They made good beers, and they were in business probably for 4 or 5 years. I didn't look. There's a great list that you showed me last night that we'll put in the show notes on Wikipedia that kind of keeps up with the history of beer beer brewing probably worldwide, but that list is local. And I didn't look to see if Acadiana was on it, but that's kind of a neat way to wander through history and time of the beer scene here in New Orleans. But you're right, for all practical purposes, you jump forward to just a couple years ago, things kind of take off. Urban South, in fact, when Nora and I recorded at Urban South, it wasn't yet open to the public. And now, I don't know the numbers, you probably would, but Urban South is right up there among the biggest local craft beer brewers, and they have great distribution as well. So that's a beer that you can certainly get, I would assume, at least along the Gulf Coast, and certainly between here and Houston, and then in the other direction along the Panhandle. Let's talk a little bit about Urban South, since that's where you spent so much time prior to COVID. Of course, they had a terrific tap room. Presumably, they still do. We just can't visit it.
Right, just can't go in. Although now you can sort of go in to pick up your beer. That's about all you can do.
It was nice, though, because it was like picnic tables and sometimes music, sometimes food trucks and vendors. The thing that jumped out at me about Urban South is the amount of beer they produce, not in terms of overall volume, but in terms of variety. Mm-hmm. So those guys produce a lot of different beers and a lot of them quickly.
Yeah, I mean, so you talked about their volume a little bit too. I don't know the numbers, but I would be willing to bet that they're now number two in Louisiana behind Abita. And they distribute essentially from sort of border to border along I-10. They're not out of state yet, as far as I know. But there is a brew pub over in Houston, so they've opened a location over there. And again, it's a standalone brew pub, so you'll have to go visit them. You can't get it over here, or vice versa, but so they're out there. As far as the number of beers or the variety of beers, that's kind of the name of the game. Lately in craft beer, you'll see a lot of places really trying to crank out a variety of things. This has been, for Urban South, among other things, the summer of the seltzer, and we can all think about that as we want to, but that's what's going on right now in the community. And that's an example, really, of craft breweries. And it's not just Urban South trying to make a relevant product and stay relevant in the marketplace. Beer sales year over year nationwide, all brands have actually been decreasing, but craft is still going up. And that's one way they do it, is to innovate. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like just a little more generally, a year and a half ago, it was all about the hazy New England style IPA. And you saw a lot of local breweries do their take on it, or you know, versions of that. Fruit beers ebb and flow, and that goes, at least locally, you know, I think back to Abita's strawberry beer, strawberry lager, which I think they still brew.
They do.
But was, you know, one of the first, that along with, I'm drawing a blank there, oh, Purple Haze.
Purple Haze, yeah.
Right?
The Raspberry.
Yeah, they were really early in that, and then a lot of places kind of did a lot of different things, and then sours came along, and you know, in more popularity. It's interesting, right, that those trends kind of ebb and flow, and you certainly see that locally. You know, on the big side, you mentioned Abita, which, by the way, again, so much is closed right now, but they are located in Abita Springs, or right near Abita Springs. A couple of years ago, they reopened or expanded their tap room and their tour. And that's pretty interesting because of the size for local. It's not something people listening to us now in August or September of 2020 could do. But eventually when that opens back up, that's fun. And that's a nice kind of beyond Bourbon Street going across to the North Shore. Abita is neat. They have had a brew pub. We'll see if that survives, with really good food. And you could sample their beers there. And then I think, to my mind, as you mentioned, probably the next two biggest are Nola Brewing, again with a really nice tap room, and Urban South. And those guys are pretty close to each other. And so that makes for a fun, even today, if you were going to go pick up beer to go, you could go see our friend Eli over at Nola Brewing and do drive-through, or not quite drive-through, I guess, but you could go and pick up beer. But right in that little corridor, on and around Chapultepec, had become sort of a little hotspot of three or four or five breweries, right?
Yeah, there's a little 2 mile, 2.5 mile stretch along Chapultepec from, let's say, roughly Napoleon down to about Market Street, so the Market Street Power Station, where you can stop in four places and pick up four different kinds of beer. You should probably not drive if you're going to have beer in all four of them, but that's not up to me to decide. And then you can even make a slight detour into the lower garden and see Courtyard over there. So there's a lot of concentration of breweries along there, and some of the biggest ones, too.
And you can get beer to go these days. Well, right. Depending on when you're listening to this, maybe you can, maybe you can't, right? But right in there, Port Orleans, right along Chapultepec, which has an open air space that's pretty nice when the weather's good. They try to have a pretty wide range of beers as well. But in their Courtyard Brewing, I kind of want to talk about them, so heads up a little bit there. And then Miel, also right in there. Those two are unique in some ways. So I'd kind of like to get your take on, you know, what their focus is and what someone might expect from a beer from those two in particular.
So Miel, just to kind of start going that direction, first of all, Miel, unfortunately, did not have any packaging capability prior to COVID, so they're really only able to sell crowlers, which are 32-ounce cans, if people don't know, out of their tap room. And they focus on, I would say, a lot of unusual ingredients, kind of South American-inspired beers. That's got a lot to do with the fact that Alex is married to J-Mo, who is, and I've forgotten exactly where she's from. I'm sorry, Alex, but she's from South America. And so those beers are like Flor de Jamaica, which I think I'm pronouncing more or less correctly, is a really interesting beer that they make over there. They do, their name is Miel, which is the Latin word for honey. You will not find a lot of honey in any of their beers, nor are they a meadery, but they have started putting some honey in their beers. Their version of Black is Beautiful, for example, has a little honey addition. And as far as Courtyard goes, again, Scott over there is in kind of the same boat. Not a packaging brewery, not yet, as far as I know, but still being able to fill crowlers out of the tap room and selling out of there. He's really been focusing, for me anyway, on, you talked about the hazy IPAs, and those are still around. They're not going anyplace. That's no longer a craze. That's a trend that's going to stick with us, I think. But so his beers tend to be, I think, a little bit bigger, a little bit more sock you in the face with some of the hop loads and things like that, which I really appreciate. And it's a great atmosphere, too. And the old location was almost this eclectic kind of outdoor courtyard area. And the new one is, you know, a little more, I don't know, I won't say put together, because that's not, I don't think, the aesthetic that they really like over there. But it's definitely more concentrated, I guess, and more of a regular taproom experience.
Yeah, I mean, the old space, when you say courtyard, that's being a little generous. And of course, the name was Courtyard. It was very easy to walk right by it and not even realize that it was there. And they did, you talk about big beers, but they did really, still do, really unique beers. There was a key lime tart or a lemon meringue pie beer that you wouldn't want to drink 20 ounces of it, but you close your eyes and it tasted just like what the name sounds like, right? And what I like about it, they're not afraid to try things like that. And there's definitely a niche in the market for that. I know you spent time in Denver, and out there, there are probably still, I can remember going out there a few years ago, and in Portland, another place where you were, small breweries that really made a name for trying things like that, or habanero beers and things like that. And that's the kind of vibe I get from them. They're willing to try that.
That's true about Courtyard, and thank you for saying that. I was focused on their IPAs. That's what I love. So, but yeah, a good sour, a well-constructed sour, and especially one, and that's really a trend in craft beer now, is flavors. So going more for flavors and not for trying to hit stats or trying to impress people with exactly what hops you're using and that kind of thing. So I've heard the brewer, the brewmaster over at the Urban South Houston location talk about, he really is striving for flavors. And I think that's something you see a lot in the market now, which, again, is where a lot of those seltzers come from and the sours that you were talking about and the fruited beers and all of that. So, yeah, you're right. Courtyard has always been experimental in that respect.
And I like that you had Miel and Courtyard sort of wedged in between some of the bigger ones, or right near the bigger ones. Not because I don't dislike those. I do. But like Miel, again, I'm going to say all these things and people can't experience it right now, but they have a really intimate little courtyard space there, and kind of an indoor-outdoor, it kind of goes seamlessly from the actual bar. And they focused a lot on sours and fruit beers when they first started. Their version of Black is Beautiful is terrific. There's a lot of good ones, but theirs is really, really good. And to me, they probably, along with Courtyard, really did start that kind of locally, that shift on really interesting beers that aren't necessarily fit a style conveniently, or a common style, I would say.
I think that's true. And the other thing about them, if I can get away from the beer for a second, is just the spirit, the community spirit that they have. And they're not the only ones, not by a long shot, but that's something that I think for a small brewery, that's one way to sort of set yourself apart a little bit, is to be a little more community oriented. And they certainly are over there. And they're also, you know, farm to table is tough with beer because barley doesn't grow here, neither do hops. But you can certainly bring in some unusual ingredients that maybe are local or are different, I guess, from what other folks are using. So they try to do that. Parlo is another one over in the Bywater, you know, way out in the Bywater that does that as well. So
you mentioned that we've talked mostly about the four or five beers that are Uptown Garden District, warehouse, back end of the warehouse district, Irish Channel a little bit. But Parlo, you're right, is on the other side. So is downriver from the French Quarter, almost to what they call the end of the world. It's where the intracoastal canal meets the Mississippi River. Really a nice walk, by the way, on the levee right there. You'll see a lot of people out walking their dogs and playing frisbee, and there's a lot of street art and graffiti and things out there that are pretty interesting. But right near there is Parlo. Beer Lab is a great description. They nailed that, I think. Really into collaborations and experimentation with different styles. And they've been open now a couple years as well, right?
Yeah, so the thing that I appreciate about them, and I don't have the opening year, I don't think, right in front of me. I'm sure I can find it in a minute. But the thing that I really appreciate about them is they do a lot of farmhouse styles and also a lot of traditional styles. They just did a grisette, for example, which is essentially a French farmhouse style, which is amazing. They've done some fruited sours and lots of stuff that they're just really surpassing. I mean, as far as their ability to bring together ingredients and to hit traditional styles, it's top notch. And I love that sometimes. I don't always want, you know, an IPA with like four hops and two different kinds of fruit. Sometimes I just want, no offense to those beers because they're great, but sometimes I just want a traditional style done well.
Yeah. I'm going to say not that long ago. And in my world with Twins, it could have been a year ago. They did an English brown ale that was just spot on, you know, and it was exactly what you would expect for the style. It wasn't fancy. It was a very common, you know, an ale, and it was just perfect. And it was on the menu at the same time as things that were very, very different. That place is an intimate space too. Like a lot of these we're talking about, they do have an outdoor space, but when you are inside, you are right up against the kettles, you know, and you can see the raw ingredients a lot of the time. But it's a really neat space, and that's a great area when you come to visit. We've done an episode about the Bywater and the Marigny, but that's a good spot to have a beer to go and to walk, because again, you're right there on the river. You can see the river traffic. You can enjoy a good beer. And when it opens again, in regular terms, whatever that means, it's a pretty fun spot. And it's off the beaten path. You know, Marigny and the Bywater are both sort of hip these days, but it's still so far. It's at the end right there before you hop over the canal and get to the Ninth Ward, that it still takes a little effort to get there, and that makes it pretty nice. And it's interesting, as I'm hearing you describe these places, they all do sort of have their personality. You know, you and I were talking offline about, well, what makes them different? And geography in New Orleans is so important. We're a relatively small city, but the difference of 2 miles or 5 miles, we're a city of neighborhoods, so it makes a big difference. And when you think about a place like Parlo versus, say, Port Orleans uptown, really different vibes completely, different sizes, different styles, but it's that community piece probably. I'm back to your idea of Miel. You know, you'll go in and there'll be people with their dogs, you know, sitting at their feet, and there'll be people playing board games and, you know, whatever. But Parlo has its own kind of funky vibe, and for my taste anyway, just really incredibly complex beers.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do your job as the host, but if you're staying in the quarter or the CBD, you can jump on a bike and get over there and have a beer, or, you know, grab one and walk around. There are a couple of great record stores over there, some great places to eat if you don't want to have something from their food truck that might be there. So you can make certainly an afternoon of it, and maybe a whole day. So.
That's a good point, because you have Bratjall down there. You have Pizza Delicious right next to Bratjall. Thank you. I was drawing a blank there. And sort of at the other end, so on that side of the French Quarter, you have Brew Carré as well, which right now, again, takeout only. And I don't know, that place is tiny. Is it always only, like, do they have a tap room?
They have a really nice little bar and small tap room bar area. But then in the back, they've got a really cool little courtyard that they've built out. So
okay.
I'm not sure if that opened right away, but it's certainly open now. And I think that might have been one of the last places I was before we couldn't go anywhere. So they're worth mentioning too. They're making, again, some really good interpretations of traditional styles, which it's almost like we've made a full circle and come back around to the things that started people brewing in the first place. And I think, I don't know, I mean, I'm just making this up, but I think maybe some brewers are doing it just to show they can.
Yeah, sure. This sort of, let me show you, I have the basics. And that place, so I've never been, I've only been there in a COVID era. And it feels like where you go to pick up the beer is almost like the back door. You know, it really does. But they make, like, they actually had a barrel sitting there, right? They put the beer on the barrel and you would pay. And that way, you know, it's distance. Yes, exactly. But they make, what made me think about them is geographically, like we're talking, you get on the downriver side of the French Quarter. And so they're just feet off of Esplanade Avenue. And then on the other end of all of that, again, in the Bywater, you have Parlo. You could easily get a beer at one and amble your way down to the other and really have a nice walk. You know, see a lot of good architecture, see a lot of good street art. You could stop in when it's open at B. Mike's and see the murals there. You could go right by where Homer Plessy got on the rail car. So there's a lot there in between the two. You're right. For as often as I ride my own bike, I don't think about if you're visiting. It's pretty easy to rent a bike and wander along Crescent Park, too, right along the river there.
And there's the Rusty Rainbow down there, so you could go take. That's a pretty good view. It might be the highest spot in all of New Orleans. I don't know. You probably know better than I, but
Monkey Hill is Monkey the highest Hill, spot in New Orleans, which is 27 feet above sea level in Audubon Zoo.
Okay.
But the Rusty Rainbow, yeah. So that's a bridge that connects. That technically might be higher, although it's not natural. A bridge that physically it's a walking bridge that gets you across the train tracks. But not far from Parlo. So you're right. You could really make a fun time of it going to those two breweries and a couple places in between, depending on what's open.
Right. Yep. And just one more quick thing about Parlo. You mentioned how tight it is in there. You're right. If they're in there working while you're sitting there having a beer, they might sweat on you. So it's that close. But it's still a great atmosphere. They're such lovely people. And the courtyard is really, really nice. So they are another place that maximizes their outdoor space.
And, you know, we do have listeners that are still coming to visit, and even though it's such an odd time, that's a place, again, right on the edge of the French Quarter. So that's super easy if you're visiting and staying in or near the French Quarter to go get a couple beers while you're here, put them in the room fridge, or just get one to go. Although, as I say this, like, it appears that New Orleans has become the only place in America where you can't have a go beer, a go cup, which is beyond bizarre as a native New Orleanian, since we are traditionally the only place in America where you can always take a beer with you wherever. So by the time people listen to this, hopefully that will have changed again. Nonetheless, that's a good place and it's nearby. We're kind of jumping all over the place, but I do want, we were talking about hazy IPAs and it made me think about, there's a brewing company, I think it's called Rally Cap. I may have that screwed up, in Baton Rouge.
That's right.
They have recently made a hazy pale ale. So instead of an IPA, it's a pale ale, so it has a little bit less of the hop bite. It's a little bit lower in alcohol by volume, and it's a really kind of neat twist on that. I was looking for a beer, I'm going to put my inner geek on display, for a fantasy baseball draft, and I came across that and thought, hey, that seems poetic, right? But it's neat because it's that style that you would expect from the New England hazy IPA, but because it's a pale ale, you know, again, you don't have that bite that you would normally have. And that's a beer that I wasn't familiar with, a company that I wasn't familiar with out of Baton Rouge. And that they have pretty good distribution, at least here in New Orleans.
Yeah, I've started to see them around a lot of the retail places that I go. So yeah, they're definitely in town. I would say that, and I know this is kind of everywhere, but I would say grocery stores here, Bromart, Rouse's have great selections too. So you can always find it, even if you can't actually go sit down and have a pint.
So that's a good diversion. Let's take that diversion. You mentioned Bromart, a little neighborhood. There's a couple of them, a little neighborhood grocery store. The one that you and I are thinking of is on Magazine Street. Really good beer selection. There's a very, very small, tiny, tiny grocery store called Canseco's. They have two. In fact, the one on Esplanade, you maybe don't know this, the one on Esplanade was the very first Whole Foods here in New Orleans. But it's tiny. They have a pretty good beer selection for as small as they are, and they just opened a second location over in Riverbend on Carrollton Avenue in an old drugstore. What else comes to mind for me there? Dornax has a pretty decent beer selection. Again, another small neighborhood grocery store. Stein's Deli. Chance to put in a non-paid plug for our friend Dan Stein. Stein's is on a magazine just off Jackson Avenue. It is a deli run by Dan Stein, who's from Philadelphia. They make terrific sandwiches. It is a really good deli, but Dan has a passion for beer and has quite a selection of beers in the reaching cooler and in the little not-so-secret room in the back. But I don't know about right now during COVID, but typically that's one of the best places in the city to go. He's always seeming to have a pretty wide selection for, you know, for just having reaching coolers,
yeah,
basically.
That's true. Dan spent a lot of effort making relationships with distributors and with importers, so he's really got one of the best bottle selections in town. And you're right. Unfortunately, right now, you can't go see that for yourself. Right. But I have been able to, and I'm not the only one. He'll do this for anybody. I've been able to get him to put together a box for me so that I can, first of all, support him, and secondly, have some beers that I might not be able to get my hands on. So,
yeah. Again, longtime listeners have heard this, but Dan does a collaboration with my wife every year, Marie, where they put together my my beer advent calendar. So Marie goes, and Dan helps her pick out 25 beers out of the selection. He usually is nice enough to put a couple special beers on the side as the season is coming up because he knows that she will ask. I still think, and I go there once a week now to get a sandwich, a Robert, by the way, I still think he hasn't made the connection between she and I. He knows who I am. He knows that she's the woman that comes in every year to buy the beers for her husband for the calendar, but I'm not sure that he has ever seen us together. But those places are all tiny and have really, really good beer selections. And so that's a way to enjoy these beers we're talking about during COVID as well. In fact, and we are jumping all over the place, and I think that's fine. One of the beers that I recently have really come to love is a hard one to find, and that's by a small brewery in New Orleans East called Cajun Fire, and they have a honey ale. Again, I've only found it at Ken Seiko's and once or twice at Bromart, so it has become a little bit of a unicorn. They contract brew, I think, out of Sterling, Virginia. But that's a really good beer. Hard to find, but that's a good one. And they don't have, you can't go on site. You know, I think they were probably selling beer, but they don't have a tap room. And so that's one that the places we're talking about, that's kind of the only place you'll find it. Rouse's sometimes. That's another one we didn't mention. Rouse's is a big local grocery store, and they have a good beer selection as well. And certainly, we started with Urban South. You can get Urban South pretty easily anywhere in the city. When you can, I would say you go to the tap room. You're going to get the best selection. You're going to get, you know, it's going to be direct. But you can find that all over as well.
And that's just to, you know, piggyback on that for a second. Every brewery's like that. Anybody who distributes, you're only going to find a select number of their brands out in the market if you really want to get all the exclusive stuff that they make. You'll have to go to the tap room, even in regular times, and particularly now. So.
You, and well, and you mentioned earlier, and then when you just said that, Chris, the impact on these breweries in terms of COVID, so far, most of the local ones have survived. We've lost one. One
all relation, yeah, which was a really, that was a real shame. They had just gotten open. Their philosophy was to make cocktail-inspired one-offs. One and done, never see it again. No matter how much you loved it, you're never going to, you know, you're never going to get there again. The head brewer was a brewer at a brewery up in Brooklyn, which a lot of your beer loving listeners will have heard of, called Other Half, and that was their philosophy. They really pioneered the whole idea of marketing beers like sneakers, right? So like there's this special version that's only going to come out once, and it's a limited edition, and you better get it if you want it. And it was really a great spot. Great pop-ups would come in there and all that. And unfortunately, that model, they just decided doesn't work during COVID, so they did close.
Yeah, their timing was just incredibly unfortunate.
Right.
Yeah, but most of the places we've talked about so far have good distribution locally, so you can certainly check them out, and some of them a little bit wider, as we mentioned. Are there any that we have not mentioned that you wanted to specifically just kind of raise up?
I'm going to talk about, at the risk of upsetting somebody, I'm going to mention Second Line, actually, as one that I've I won't say discovered, but kind of rediscovered recently. And they're way up at the top of Canal Street, way up by the cemeteries. They're not actually on Canal, and I'm sorry, I don't know the exact address, but they're right up, they're up there by the cemeteries and the big cemetery bus stop up there. So they are, again, kind of an indoor-outdoor, mostly outdoor courtyard kind of a model as far as their tap room. They are in distribution, so you can find their stuff. But they're a brewery that has gotten my attention again recently, I think, just in terms of the fact, again, they're kind of going back to some traditional styles. One of my beers of the week was their beer. It might have been last week, actually. And I just think that, you know, they're really doing everything that they can to try to stay afloat and stay relevant during COVID. So that's a brewery that I would say, if you get a chance, if you're in town, go see them.
Well, you know what's nice about that too? So Second Line is right off of Canal and not far from Carrollton. So what that means is it's right along the Lafitte Greenway. So the Lafitte Greenway is a greenway that goes from the French Quarter, from the back of the French Quarter, into Mid-City and Lakeview. And so, again, if you're on a bike, you can easily, that's not that far a ride, really, a couple miles at best, you can ride right there to Second Line. And so that's nice. Or if you're a local, right, and you live in that area or you've just moved here, that's fun, a fun spot on a bike. You're right. They've kind of come full circle with the styles of beers they brew. Really good. They went sort of kind of into real niche beers to back to just really solid examples of styles.
And I think, you know, I hope that people, you don't think that, you know, the only thing I like are traditional styles, but sometimes that's important. You know, sometimes the ability to be able to find, even if it's a newer take on a traditional style, is really fun for somebody who's really appreciated beer for a long time. So,
sure. Absolutely. I mean,
again, I'll drink all the lactose IPAs you want, but sometimes I just like to have, a Kolsch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that when you said Second Line, it made me think about, you had mentioned Dixie Beer. So Dixie was on Tulane Avenue at the site of what is now the Veterans Hospital. They still have the cupola there. It's their research center. But Dixie had been contract brewed for a long time up in Wisconsin. And the Bensons bought the brewery, I guess, in 2014, 15, 16. And just in the last couple of years brought it back. And they have gone out into New Orleans East. They are actually one of the ones that they have a big open space. So for the most part, you can go hang out there in the green space. And again, with the COVID rules, it's changing all the time. But they have a pretty nice space, and they were having live music when you could have live music. But certainly when the weather's nice, it's a pretty neat space to sit. And they've kind of replicated the cupola that they were famous for. And to my mind, so there's a lot of, I went off on this in the last episode, but people are upset that Dixie Beer is changing their name. And people are arguing that, well, Dix refers to a form of currency, and that's why it was named Dixie Beer. Dix does refer to currency, but Dixie Beer was created in 1917 in the height of the Jim Crow era. There's no evidence, even in their own history, that they were doing it to specifically sort of celebrate this currency. So whatever they call themselves, in my opinion, they're making better beer than they've ever made. A bunch of different styles. They're trying different things. They had a Datsuma IPA that was really good. They had a strong ale that was about 10 or 11% that was good. To my mind, they're trying to be as creative and inventive as some of these smaller breweries that we've talked about. And locals that remember Dixie beer as the beer that your papa drank and that wasn't any good haven't had a Dixie in a long time. And even their flagship beer, the lager, I think is pretty good these days as a lager.
It's really worth a trip out there. I've only been out there, unfortunately, one time before everything closed, and they remain closed, even though they might be able to be open under the regulations. But they have, first of all, a little 30-barrel brew house right behind the bar, and there's somebody actually working on it, so that's kind of fun to watch. And that's probably where a lot of those sort of craftier beers are made. And then, of course, they have the big brewery in the back. The tour is good. There's a lot of Dixie memorabilia and historical information up on the second floor that you can go take a look at. I think they do a tasting at the end of the tour. So it's really worthwhile. It's an iconic brand. You mentioned that. I love it. I love the fact that it's back. I don't care what they're going to call themselves going forward. I think that was the right decision too. But yeah, they were in continuous operation from 1907, actually, so earlier, all the way up until Katrina. So Katrina flooded the brewery up on Tulane Avenue, and they never did reopen in that location. But so I think we ought to all celebrate, frankly, the fact that that brand is back and we can call it whatever we like.
Yeah, I agree. And if they make good beer, you know, what's the name matter? Also, so they're in New Orleans East. We mentioned Cajun Fire is in New Orleans East. And then there's a tiny brewery as well called Royal Brewing out near Lakefront Airport. Which, by the way, have you been out to Lakefront Airport?
I don't think I have.
Okay, so there's a small terminal. It's the, they also call it Millionaire. So it's the, you know, private airport. But there is incredible Art Deco architecture in the terminal there. And I don't know what's happening right now, but Messina's opened a restaurant out there that was, Messina's is terrific. They have a couple of locations, but they had opened one out there, and right near that, almost, I think it's on the same little road, is Royal Brewing. So it's interesting that there's three in New Orleans East, and that's a prime spot. It had been an area that was hard hit in Katrina, had really been slow to come back, largely African-American, Vietnamese population, but those things, and the councilwoman from that area, I know, has worked hard to bring business out there. So getting Dixie out there is a big deal. And then you have these others. Again, when life returns to some semblance of normal, it's really interesting to me that you have these three breweries. You're going to end up having a couple of tap rooms or a couple bars out there to sort of bring them together. And I know from having talked to the folks at Dixie that they are interested in trying to use their influence and their brand to help these others that are in that area, because of course it helps everyone to get people out there. So that's a pretty neat thing. Hard to find those beers right now, but it's just interesting that we've seen this kind of move to New Orleans East. You know, you and I started the show talking about four or five breweries, maybe six breweries, in a very tight space in the Irish Channel, Garden District, Uptown area. And now you're going to have these three in New Orleans East. So it's interesting how geography affects things here in New Orleans. As we start to wrap up, are there any sort of glaring omissions? I know we haven't covered every place, and that wasn't my intent. We'll put a link. Right. But anything that jumps out at you that we maybe just didn't talk about?
I think we covered the geography, which is great. I mean, there are, like, I'm not sure if we actually said the numbers, but in New Orleans, there are 13 breweries now. There are actually a total of 15 brew houses. So I'm counting Gordon Biersch and the Crescent City Brew Pub, which is down in the French Quarter. There's also a cidery. Some of our folks probably like cider, and cider's kind of a thing unto itself. And I don't think anybody else in Louisiana is making cider that I know of. I'm sure I'm probably wrong. Out of 40, there must be somebody.
Is that the one over on Broad Street?
Yeah, Broad Street
Cider. So that's interesting, because almost across the street, it's probably a block away, you can go to Zony Mash.
Zony Mash.
And I saw that that used to be what Owl Brewing?
Wayward Owl.
Thank you, Wayward Owl. That's in an old movie theater. And of course, again, trying to adapt to the market, they have taken what was sort of an awkward parking lot, and they are building a really nice courtyard-esque area. So you could go check out the cidery, and then again, you'd also get a little history lesson, because you would walk right past the Broad Street pumping station.
Right.
And I can't believe I'm 119 episodes in. I haven't done an episode about the wood screw. So people are like, what? But that's the whole idea behind how our pumps work here. But you could go from one to the other very, very easily.
You certainly could. And that's probably, talk about omissions, that's probably one that we omitted we shouldn't have. So Zony Mash, right next door to the Brewstock homebrew store now, too. So they've moved over there. And Oliver I was going to say Oliver and his folks. I'm not sure there are any folks besides Oliver right now. But they're doing, you know, the Lord's work over there, getting beer ingredients out to people who like to homebrew, which I just made a batch recently. So
you did. It was very good.
I didn't bring you any today. I'm sorry. But Zony Mash, back to those guys. We'll talk really quickly. So again, pretty new in the old Wayward Owl space, which is the Gym Theater, former Gym Theater, and making some unusual stuff. There's a cool setup in there. There's a stage in there, and so, because it was a theater, and, you know, Wayward Owl, I think, was doing some music performances in there. Zony Mash, I think, had some plans around that, but they hadn't maybe quite gotten that far yet. They're fairly new, but again, making some interesting experimental beers. Great label art, which is worth something in the industry, you know, to set yourself apart. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell what's in that can. So definitely that part of town, that's a place that you want to stop.
Well, right. And again, you're talking about there's a cluster, right? All of a sudden coming together right there. And Brewstock, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a neat place just to check out. And if you're even thinking about brewing beer, and certainly if you're a home brewer and you visit New Orleans, that's worth a stop and go and check in. Just because, you know, if you're a home brewer, you like to go to check out what the local is. And undoubtedly, again, in typical times, you can go in and probably get a taste of whatever it is that they happen to be working on. We will put a list, we'll put a link to the Wikipedia site that we mentioned. We'll also put links to the work that you're doing with Beer Bearings. And again, I think the fact that we haven't covered them all really says probably the most about the beer community in New Orleans, that it has changed in a couple of years since I had done the episode with Nora, but it really does continue to flourish even during this time. And you can get such a wide range of local beers. We didn't even really get into beers beyond New Orleans, Great River Raft and the beers they make up there. Bayou Teche is one I don't know what their distribution is like.
You can get it. It definitely is available here. They're one of the few places that actually bottles beers in a can now, pretty much. Craft beer, all beers in a can. And that's a whole story unto itself. But they are pretty available around here. Yeah, we could go on for days. Southern Prohibition over in Mississippi. I mean, just all kinds of great breweries in the region along the Gulf Coast. It's I'm not going to call it. It is kind of a renaissance. I was going to say I'm not going to call it a renaissance, but it actually is.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. And that's what, when you sent me the link of the brewers and it had the history, that's what I thought about, because there were a ton of breweries, not only here in New Orleans, but in the United States, right? And then it went through a decline, and then the laws and, and we jumped back into this renaissance, I think is fair, across the country. And certainly here, I do think we were a little later. I mean, I watched you at Rheingeist, and Cincinnati has just such a long history of beer. But when you were there, you and Jen were there, there still were only a handful of microbreweries, craft breweries here. And now, again, have more than a dozen. And really, what I hope that our listeners have gotten today is there's a wide range, you know, in terms of traditional styles and larger breweries, microbrewer or craft breweries, to just tiny places like Courtyard and Brew Caray doing really inventive things. You know, so there's a big range for the beer lover. And now you mentioned cidery and the influence of seltzers. Back to your Cicerone designation and studies and that idea of sommelier, I think there's a lot of nuance there. And the New Orleans community, beer community, reflects that, reflects what you see nationwide.
That's true. And I guess one thing I would say, especially from a visitor standpoint, there are a lot of people who think they don't like beer and may not want to go into a craft brewery because they might be feel like they're going to be intimidated or something. But I would say just go in there, dive in, ask questions. The people who work in craft breweries are almost universally friendly. You don't make it long if you're not. And they'll be happy to help you find that thing that you love. And even if you don't love it, get a flight and, you know, just say you tried it.
Just taste it, right. So, Chris, that beeping in the background was the signal that the twins, Olivia and Sophia, have arrived home from school. So that's probably a good signal for you and I to call it a day. Thank you very much for taking the time to join me. We will put links to Beer Bearings as well as the information we talked about and a list of the places in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/119. You can also find discount codes for our partners and sponsors there and a link to become a Patreon supporter.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.